Hello, reader. You're plugged in to another episode of PageCast, brought to you by Jonathan Ball Publishers. We hope you enjoy it.
Hello, I'm Conyita Loxton. I'm a Cape Town-based fiction writer, author of the Being series of books, and most recently in 2024, author of What's Wrong with June. And I have the great pleasure today of speaking with Shamiz Patel. Shamiz is a very talented writer and author of the acclaimed fantasy series known as the Sentinel series, which, and let me get this right, it's The Last Feather, published in 2022, The Eternal Shadow, 2023, and The First King, 2024. So the series is described as bringing threat and danger, hidden world fantasy, and touches of Suzanne Collins, which fans of V.E. Schwab and Sarah J. Maas will love. So I had to read that because I wanted to make sure I got everything right. And today we're going to be talking about Playing Flirty, which is Shamiz's first novel in the romance genre. And yes, if you're listening to the years, it means that Shamiz with Playing Flirty has published 4 books in 4 years.
Yes.
Yes. So are you very tired?
I am so tired.
Okay, but before we get to Playing Flirty, can you tell a little bit about yourself and how you got to the point where you published, not only locally, but internationally, available everywhere? And this is the holy grail for South African writers, so you've got to go into that a little bit as well, please.
Okay. I'm so happy to be here, so happy to be chatting to you. I started writing like most authors, I think. As a child, you really just write stories because you have to. And then I stopped for a long while. I heard about NaNoWriMo when I was studying, joined for a bit. It really sparked my creativity. I found that pressure of writing your first draft within in a month really got me going. And I wrote what was a dumpster fire of a first draft. It was awful. There was actually, other than the idea, there was not a single redeemable passage.
God, there was. I'm sure there will be other opinions about that.
No, it was before I understood craft at all. I was at that point just telling a story that I thought was very cool. After that, I got swallowed by my studies, and it seems at my most stressed moments, I turned back to writing.
Okay.
So then came COVID. And I was, like everyone else, very stressed, very sad, very much in isolation. And writing and reading has always been an escape and a way to do things that you're not able to. And during lockdown, there were so many things that we weren't able to do that my mind started drifting again. I was supposed to be writing my master's. So again, always using it to avoid something more important. And that's when I wrote Playing Flirty.
Okay.
Which a lot of people don't know was written before the Celine trilogy. Mm. I wrote Playing Flirty as a first draft and very boldly sent it out to literary agents, almost as is. Very, very embarrassing.
Very brave.
Very brave. Very, very naive. I got rejected, as one would imagine, but those rejections, they made me cry, but they also showed me that this is a real thing, that these agents will reply to you. And I think as a South African, you do sort of forget that you can send an email. It doesn't matter that they're based across the oceans. So it encouraged me to really figure out what was wrong with my writing, figure out story structure, how to self-edit, what level of work agents expect. I didn't realize that an agent expected a polished piece of work because in my head, it's going to go to an editor. Mm. I didn't realize that you need to self-edit to the 99th degree. But my heart was a little broken with Playing Flirty. So I didn't only start a new novel or manuscript, I started a new genre.
Yes, that's the other impressive thing. 4 years, 4 books, now a new genre.
I was like, maybe I'm not cut out for romance. Let me just pivot to my other love, which has always been fantasy. And I dove in and there were bits of that NaNoWriMo story that came back to me. So like I said, not a redeemable phrase or sentence in there, but the story, the world that I'd created in that madness of 1,667 words a day, it came back to me. And this time it came back to me with all the research I'd done on story structure.
Okay.
And I knew how to better package a trilogy. I wrote it I found out that there's something called beta readers and critique partners. So this novel actually went through the process that it was supposed to go through. And when I started submitting, I decided, I think again, because of how broken up I was by all those rejections, I decided to go for an indie press.
Okay.
But one based in the UK and the US. I submitted to a few, and Flame Tree Press got back to me within, I think it was within 10 days or so.
Dreams are made.
I was so shocked that I went on another deep dive, because I'd already researched them when applying, but I did another deep dive just to make sure this was legit, because I was like, no, surely this is, they're going to scam me for sure.
Yeah.
But they were very upfront and they've been incredible to deal with. And I think that was the little boost that I needed to go back and revise the romance with, once again, all the editing tips that I'd learned. The romance had a bit of a more interesting journey in that there was a pitch fest on Twitter.
Okay.
Where you get to pitch a book, and if an agent likes the pitch, they literally like your tweet back then, whatever it's called now, I'm not sure. And that gives you the permission to submit your full manuscript to them. So for anyone that doesn't know, you have to initially propose your story to an agent with just the first three chapters usually, which it's hard to sell a story in three chapters. So getting an opportunity to submit the whole thing is pretty cool. And I got a few likes, some interest, and I submitted to who is now my agent. And she actually didn't reply to me for 3 months. And I assumed it was just another rejection. It's like, I'm never sending this book to anyone ever again.
I mean, 3 months is sort of minimum these days.
And I messaged her directly and I just asked her, I was like, listen, this book, I thought I've done my best with it. Like, what is wrong with it? At this point, I'll take your rejection, but a little guidance would be amazing because I don't know what's wrong with it anymore.
Yes.
And she replied saying, I haven't read it yet. It's like, oh, I'm so sorry. She's like, it's actually next on my list. And within a few days, she sent me the message that all authors are waiting for, the let's hop on a call. And I'd heard about this call that people have with agents. So I was very excited to do that. And that's when she offered representation.
Well, that is fantastic. And I do think it is the writer's dream for it all to happen. But before you go on, there are a couple of things that I snooped around and found out that you haven't said is that you're also a civil engineer by day. You like singing Baby Shark to your daughters. Mm-hmm. You are a professional binge watcher and a fangirl. And that Choc Chip cookies are your kryptonite.
They are.
Anything you want to add that's not out there on the interweb?
Yeah. It's too much that's out there. I probably shouldn't add anything else, except that I suppose my kid has outgrown Baby Shark, but okay. We still sing plenty of other things together sometimes.
I'm sure you're probably a little bit grateful for that.
I am, but now she's sort of moved into real music.
Oh, okay.
And I have to, not that word.
So can we talk just about the genres that you touched on earlier? Do you have a favorite, and does either one of them come easy, or is romance just another form of fantasy?
I would say that a romantic subplot is my favorite.
Okay.
Romance, I love romance. Mm. I don't think I'll ever be able to write a full novel length story that doesn't have a romance in it. It wouldn't have to be a proper contemporary romance or fantasy, but anything, a mystery with a romantic subplot. I would love to write every single genre with a romantic subplot.
So in the next one, somebody's going to die.
Someone's going to die, but it's not going to be the two that I love.
Okay, but let's get into playing flirty. I'm going to give you the chance to do an elevator pitch without any time limit. So
no,
go for it.
I thought I was done with this.
I like to ask it because, so that in that way, I'm sure that I'm not going to give any spoilers. I mean, so much in here that I'm scared to just go there and say
okay,
it.
Say when.
Yeah, okay. So you
go. So Playing Flirty is an adult rom-com. It focuses on a geeky rivals to lovers. It's a love letter to the Lord of the Rings, in my opinion. And it's about two gaming enthusiasts, one board game and one video game, who end up having to become unlikely allies and team up with the chance of winning a board game competition. But they soon realize that they're playing games both on and off the board. And it turns into a flirtation game, which is where the title comes from.
Okay. Well, I wanted to, you touched on that you started writing it in COVID. And what was the inspiration for romance in that time? And also sort of the gaming setting in a time where we were all isolated from each other?
I think it was exactly that. I deeply missed my friends. I thought I was an introvert, but I definitely need I need to socialize, and I especially need to socialize within very niche interests.
Okay.
And one of those interests is bonding over games. And I couldn't see my friends. I couldn't have what Rose has in the novel.
Yes.
So I wrote about it, and anyone that reads it will see that she has these weekly game nights with a very solid group of friends. And it was nice spending time with them.
Yes. I can relate to that. I also wrote my last book in COVID times, and it becomes writing that book becomes your friend in a way also.
It does.
But now, as a Cape Town bred, born writer, that's what the two of us have in common at this stage. You know, I love writing about Cape Town. And so it was so interesting for me to see that you'd set your book in San Diego. And it made me very curious about what it was like, you know, writing this book during COVID times as a South African Capetonian and setting it in a whole different country, a whole different city. Why was it that you chose San Diego? What is it about the setting that drew you? And how did that setting influence the novel itself?
In this case, it was easy because of the San Diego Comic-Con.
I see.
So okay. Comic-Con plays quite a big role in the novel, and I wanted it to be realistic that this group of friends would frequent Comic-Con, and Rose, being who she is, would definitely want to go to the biggest one in the world.
I see, okay.
And it's a dream of mine to visit.
So it'll be a nice research trip, sort of post-book research trip.
Celebration.
So the thing that I really enjoyed about playing Flirty Young, overall I loved the book, but there were two things that I really liked. And the first thing is that, you know, the characters are alive and they're layered and they've got depth. And it's also not just about Rose and William and the romance that they have, but also about the personal growth that they are going through themselves. I mean, Rose starts off life with a life goal spreadsheet that covers her career and a romantic life. And William is a more sort of take it as it comes, see where it goes every day kind of thing. But as their relationship develops, their personalities develop, and it's got an impact not only on them, but also on their friendship group, their relationship with their parents, especially William and his father. And I really, really liked that. And it made me wonder if there was a character that you particularly liked writing, or a relationship that you particularly liked writing, or whether some of it was harder than the others, especially when, you know, as you say, in a COVID kind of situation where you cut off from most of your relationships. And what was easy to write, what was hard to write?
Honestly, this book was one of the easiest things to write. Of anything that I've ever written, this book just flowed out of me. I mean, as I said, the first draft was awful and everyone rejected it. But I had such fun writing every single one of these characters. And I think the relationship that was my favorite to write was between Rose and her parents.
Yes. I think for me, that was also a favorite. I really loved the interaction with her mother. I think we can all, if you can't relate to it, you wish that you could relate to it, that was the parenting relationship that you did have.
It was such fun to be able to write such quirky parents that loved her as much as they did. And nice to write parents that didn't give their kid too much trauma.
Yes. And I think, you know, for me, it's all sort of an aspirational kind of relationship. My children are a little bit older. So I think that, you know, when my kids get to Rose's sort of age, it's something that I would be able to do and not be the one that just says, have you eaten? Have you slept? How much exercise have you done?
It's the goal.
Yeah. So the other thing that I really liked about playing Flirty is that you could read this book on so many levels. So you could just read about the romance between Rose and William if that's what you wanted. And I kept a list here of all the other things that it deals with. And, you know, there are threads dealing with friendship, family dynamics, workplace dynamics, career goals, life goals, workplace harassment, this whole pressure of feeling like by the time you're 30, you must have achieved something. The just feeling around how women feel in their body. There's so much that's packed into this book that you did it in such a skillful, nuanced, effortless kind of way that I don't think people realize actually how hard that is to do, because sometimes you read a book like a rom-com and you think, oh, it's just light and fluffy and it's going to pass through me. But if you want to, you can read into those elements as it suits you, I guess, which I think is very skillful of you. And I wanted to know, is this something that you consciously did? Were you aware of it? Did you want to put in these little threads? Or was it just something that came naturally to you at the time?
Firstly, thank you. Those are all very nice things to say. Secondly, it was intentional. So much so that when we started pitching it to publishers, a lot of them came back and said that as much as they enjoyed the story, they weren't sure where to put it on the shelf.
Yes.
And we realized it was sort of halfway between women's fic and romance. And the version that you've read is actually the more romantic version.
Okay.
So I had to pick a side, essentially, and lean into it. And romance wins.
Okay. I can relate to that, actually. But we're sort of halfway through the pod now, and I want to make sure I get through all the questions. But the one thing you can't talk about, or you can't not talk about in this conversation when you talk about playing flirty, is talk about gaming. So William is a game developer. Rose has got a game that she's developed and that she wants to enter into a competition. And, you know, I really understood the dynamics of gaming in the sense that it's very social, very interactive. They've got all these weekly meetings. They play online. And I was wondering how gaming, or why gaming, became such a central element for you in playing flirty. Are you a gamer, online gamer, on-table gamer? Did you research?
I'm a very casual gamer.
Okay.
I love it more than I play it.
Okay.
So I'm one of those gamers, and the gaming community knows my type.
Okay.
She plays Sims.
Yes.
Stardew Valley, and probably like a Pokemon emulator.
Okay.
So I replay those same games and they bring me plenty of comfort. I am a huge, as I mentioned in the bio, I'm a huge fangirl.
Okay.
I go to Comic-Con.
Okay.
I love seeing gamers. I love seeing Marvel geeks. I love seeing cosplay. So it was something I wanted to write about because I don't think that it gets enough representation for adults who still enjoy these things. People often think you outgrow it. And I suppose that was my motivation to do so.
I know that I can understand that also because I'm the only one in my family that's not an online gamer.
Okay.
And so they have this world that they inhabit and everybody's very social in it. And so, you know, a little bit on the outside and they love the whole thing. So I've tried, but I think The Sims, in terms of understanding, is the closest that I can get. So now I've seen a blurb for Playing Flirty. It might have come off your website, but it says, Playing Flirty is a Rivals to Lovers rom-com with just enough steam to make you blush, but not enough to throw the book out of the window when someone catches you reading it. It's a love letter to all things geeky and playing. We're never too old to play. And that makes me want to talk about the spice in your books. I read somewhere that you describe Playing Flirty as door ajar. So would you, for the listeners, explain what door ajar, open door, closed door means, and where you put your books on the spectrum? And then if you want, you can also talk about whether you did any research into this particular aspect for your books.
Sure. This is always my favorite thing to talk about. For anyone that doesn't know, open and closed door describes the level of spice in a book, which is also whether or not sex gets explicitly written on page. I wrote the Celine trilogy with an open door scene, one open door scene in the second book, if I remember correctly. The third book sort of leaned back into the door jar. And with Playing Flirty, I called it door jar. I also called it crack door. I also called it watching through a beaded curtain, which makes it ultra creepy. But it's just, you see just enough to know what's happening, but the moment is still quite private between the two main characters. I think every story requires a different level, and I write what feels good for that book. I think in the Celine trilogy, the open door scene is in The Eternal Shadow, which is book two, And with a tiny bit of a spoiler, that is where the romantic arc finds its climax.
Okay.
Which is a fun word to use yeah. in this conversation.
Yes.
And in Playing Flirty, there was so much focus on friendship and the geekiness that it didn't feel right for me to write a very, very explicit scene. So, yes, I'm sorry if you wanted more. If you wanted the door to be wider or for hinges, it's not this one.
Yeah, as a writer myself, I'm probably closed door ajar. The rest of it just feels too hard to write, which may be also an interesting way to put it in this conversation.
I mean, I've written it. Like I said, yeah. I did write it for The Eternal Shadow.
Yeah.
And in terms of research done, I can't say I did any specific research other than the books I've already read
yes.
with those levels.
Okay. Great. Thank you. So I was wondering, you know, sometimes as writers, we hide parts of ourselves in our characters, intentionally or unintentionally. And I know that Rose feels a lot of pressure with her life goals and her 5-year plans. And with 4 books in 4 years, it makes me want to ask you if it's something that you can relate to. Do you feel writing pressure and what are your goals?
I can't say that I relate to Rose as intensely regarding life goals. I definitely have goals. But I haven't put any deadlines on them. I know that I would like my writing to grow. I would like my next book deal to be bigger.
Mm.
I would like more readers every year, more reviews, but there isn't a number. I can't say that in 2 years I want to be a New York Times bestseller or have a movie deal in, you know, 4 years. It's as long as there's progress for me in all aspects, not just writing, as long as I'm seeing progress, I'm happy.
Okay. Sounds very reasonable and Rose-like at this point.
And Rose-like.
And I recently was asked a question that I found quite hard to answer myself. And so now I ask all writers.
Oh, that's nice.
Which is, why do you write?
It's not such a hard question for me, actually. It's a difficult to find a succinct way to answer it. But I write because I have no other choice.
Okay.
Those characters, they play around in my mind at every moment when I'm trying to focus, when I'm trying to sleep or shower. Rose is there telling me what she wants to do. And William's there waiting for me to write the happy ending. And I'm like, fine.
People will tell us they drags for
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah. No, exactly. Exactly. But as soon as I get their story out on page, they leave me alone.
Okay.
And they get given to the rest of the world. And
like an exorcism or
yes, they go in love with the readers. They're not mine to keep and to hold and to take care of. And now they exist. And everyone has their own thoughts about them. So I think they've been kept busy.
Okay. And so on the writer's life itself, I had a look around online and I saw that you've been doing some really fun things. So you had done interviews on Twitch, a paleo party. I see your Instagram, Facebook, all of that is fantastic. It's very natural and unselfconscious and enviable, if I would say, from another writer. You know, writing and marketing, or writers and marketing, don't always easily go together because you are the kind of person who wants to write quietly and get the voices out of your head. And then next thing you are speaking to a room full of people, in my case, sometimes not always knowing what to say. And so I want to ask you, having done so much in the last 4 years, what advice would you give to aspiring writers or to writers in the same kind of position who now have to be out there, be the face of their books, have their choc chip obsessions out on the internet?
It's hard. It is my least favorite part of my author journey is marketing.
Mm.
I absolutely hate feeling like I'm pushing myself on people. I have extreme... It's not great for a writer, but I have extreme rejection sensitivity.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't feel good to keep telling people, buy my book. But how else will people know it even exists? And so I'm reminding myself that it is a product to be sold. I'm not selling myself. It is something that I've written that has value, that brings joy. Mm-hmm. And it is much easier to sell and market knowing the result, knowing that it might keep someone company.
Mm-hmm.
It might make them happy. I've gotten really wonderful feedback from some readers where it's helped them through moments of distress. And that itself is a reason to keep writing and keep pushing. Advice to, that's the advice to the current authors who need to find a way to market their books. Just do it.
Yeah.
Think of what, why you wrote it, what you loved about it, and how good it made you feel writing it. And then
get a ring light.
And then get a ring light. Get a ring light and then just throw it out there because you'll find your readers. Mm. Depending on how much you market, you'll find them quickly or slowly, but you'll find them. For new readers, new writers, sorry. I would focus on just writing the book.
Mm.
Just write the book. Figure out your writing craft so you don't waste a year querying agents who are going to reject you. Learn how to edit. And my advice to everyone, including myself, is as long as you're still having fun, you're doing it right.
Bobby, good advice. I want to know, so as a writer, as a civil engineer, as a mom, it's such a cliched question to say, where do you find the time to write? And I know that sometimes I've got a friend who gets very irritated when you ask that question because she says, if it's important, you'll find time for it. But the reality is that there are only so many hours in a day. So would you talk a little bit about your writing process, about your writing style? When do you write? How do you fit it all in?
At the beginning, with the Celine trilogy and writing Playing Flirty, it was really being squeezed in. I was writing on my phone a lot of the time on Google Doc. I would write in the queue, in bed, while I was literally putting my child to sleep. Once she's asleep, when she was much younger, I wasn't allowed to move. If I moved, she woke, and then it was chaos. So I would sort of be bedlocked for about 2 hours during a nap or whatever. And it was a great time to write on my phone. Since then, though, I have realized that I've burnt myself out quite a bit because I was writing, well, editing couldn't happen on the phone. So that happened at night after the whole house went to bed. I'd start at probably 10 and do it until midnight. And at some point, I realized I do need sleep.
Unfortunately.
And I've actually stepped back from civil engineering. And I'm still working, but much, much less. So I'm getting to do a bit of writing in the daytime, which is a whole other experience.
Oh, it's fantastic. I myself am a recovered lawyer. So I understand the joy of being able to write in the day.
The sun's out.
Yes. One last thing. What are you reading at the moment?
I'm currently listening to Lunar Love by Lauren Kung Jessen, and I'm enjoying it so much. I'm at the 72% point, and they're happy. And I'm a little bit nervous what's going to come.
Yeah. Because you know there's still space for things to happen at 72%.
It's that third act that makes or breaks a book for me. At the moment, it's a full 5 stars.
Okay.
And I'm actually stressed. Okay. I don't know if I should go any further or just end it here at 72%.
Well, you sold it to me. I'm going to have a look afterwards. Lastly, I did hear, see somewhere that you are working on something new that's for 2026. Do you want to just mention that before
we go? I'd love to. It's the second book in the Playing Flirty universe. So the friend group that we mentioned earlier that play game nights every Wednesday night, another character in that group, he gets his love story.
I see.
He is the civil engineer who is very shy, very awkward, and has no idea how to speak to women in real life. So he chats to them while playing games. And there's one specific girl that he's been gaming with for years, but they've never met. And book two will be about their romance.
Oh, I'm so looking forward to it. Playing Flirty has made me look forward to 2026,
even though
it's a little bit early in the year to say that. Thank you very much for talking with me.
It's been such a
pleasure. And I can't wait for your next book.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of PageCast, brought to you by Jonathan Ball Publishers. Did you love what you heard? Don't just stop at the stories. Buy the books. Visit your favorite bookstore to grab your next read. And remember to subscribe, share, and join us again next week for more fascinating conversations. Until then, happy reading. Thank you for listening to this episode of PageCast, brought to you by Jonathan Ball Publishers. Did you love what you heard? don't just stop at the stories. Buy the books. Visit your favorite bookstore to grab your next read. And remember to subscribe, share, and join us again next week for more fascinating conversations. Until then, happy reading.